Spin. We've heard a lot about spin already today. Including spin makes life hard, right? It adds 6 extra parameters to the waveform. And we've heard a lot already about how covering this full spin space with numerical relativity simulations is a daunting prospect. It's also hard to search this space, right? Suddenly there's 6 extra dimensions that I need to search. And so what I want to tell you about is a few reasons why it's difficult to go about this search when we add spins, and some things that have been done and are currently being done to try and get us past this. Okay, so the first issue is binary orientation. Probably everyone knows this, but we should go over it. For non-processing systems, if I change the orientation of the binary, then the waveform I see in my detector basically always looks the same. The amplitude can change, and the phase can change, and that's it. Okay, so these 4 parameters kind of collapse out down to 2. So my 4 parameters here are distance, an inclination angle, polarization, and some kind of initial phase. Right? They all collapse down into just changing the amplitude and the phase of the system. And we know methods from a long time that to maximize over this amplitude and phase and just deal with it analytically. I should point out, if higher harmonics are involved, life does become more complicated. In pretty much the whole of this talk, I'm just talking about the dominant harmonic. But even with that, for processing systems, changing the orientation can really change the waveform, and this makes our life hard. And so it's nice to have pictures, right? This is face-on, neutron-star black hole. On the left, I have a non-spinning, the neutron-star spin we're going to ignore. On the left, I have a non-spinning black hole. On the right, I have a black hole with a spin of 0.2 in the x direction. So there's going to be some precession. Right? The waveforms look kind of similar. But if I go to edge-on, I just flip the system, this waveform on the left is just a scaled version of the one on the right. Is a scaled version of the one on the previous slide. Clearly, the one on the right is doing something more complicated. Right? So this makes my life harder. Right? I have to worry about this precession and searching, and the fact that actually the orientation of the system relative to my detector just changes what I'm looking for quite dramatically. Okay, so how do we go about this search? Right, if we ignore eccentricity, we have 15 parameters to worry about. So far, we haven't worked out how to do this search. You know, ignoring mergers and ringdowns, just worrying about 2 spinning things and using PN waveforms. Brute force, maybe Markov chain Monte Carlo, nested sampling. None of these can do an all-time, all-sky, all-parameter search. We don't know how to do it. Some of these MCMC and nested samplings can sort of zoom in on candidates, right? And we'll hear, I think there's talks about things like that tomorrow or Saturday. So what we're trying to do here is actually do a search with spinning waveforms, right? And we're using this physical template family of waveforms introduced by Yi Pan and Alessandra and Michaela and Yanbai. A few years ago, Diego Fazzi wrote a nice PhD thesis about this and did a lot of the coding up of these things. So there's some nice details in there. Basically, they're single-spin waveforms where you ignore the spin of one of the systems, so they're ideal for something like neutron-star black hole systems. They have a pretty good overlap with double-spin systems. So if you just blindly go and make a waveform, with maybe sort of nearly equal masses, and you just go and search for a double spin system, you do kind of well. But of course, the single spin parameters are then sort of phenomenological parameters that pick out some effective spin of the two spin system. But they do okay. And the cool thing here is basically you start to use analytical tricks to reduce the parameter space. Throwing away one spin got us down to 12 parameters. You'll see then some analytical tricks will get us further. So we restrict it to the dominant harmonic. So we've got Y2, 2, 1, 0, minus 1, and minus 2. And there are 4 parameters that determine the amplitudes of each of these phases, right, of each of these components. And they're the same 4 parameters we saw before: distance, some initial inclination angle, some initial polarization, initial phase. And the trick that these guys came up with, which is pretty cute, is you just maximize freely over these Y2M, okay? And there are 5 of them, and there's only 4 parameters. So you're letting, you know, there's a constraint here that you just kind of ignore. But it works pretty well, and it gets rid of four parameters physically for me. Additionally, if the precession is slow, then there's a, you know, you can think of a phase between sort of the initial spin and the initial orbital alignment. You can also maximize over that one in a way that we know we do with the non-spinning guys. So analytically, you've got rid of five parameters. Okay? So this is nice. So then hopefully we can go on and do the search. But of course, that doesn't come for free. Okay? Before, you know, we were doing something different. Now we've got to maximize over all these parameters. Right? Our life is more complicated. And in particular, what happens is the statistic we calculate in noise has a different character than the non-spinning one. In the non-spinning case, our signal-to-noise ratio is chi-squared distributed with 2 degrees of freedom. And that's what I've plotted here in the blue. For this PTF search with this maximization, it's pretty much chi-squared distributed with 6 degrees of freedom. Okay, and that's this green guy. Right? And then what you want to do is, if you fix a false alarm rate, right, we do sort of millions of trials of this, different time points, different templates, different, you know, whatever else. And so you want to fix a false alarm rate. There's 1 in 1,000,000 chance of getting an SNR bigger than that. And maybe for the blue guy, you know, might live out here somewhere. But clearly for green, I'm going to have to set a threshold somewhere out there. Right? And so I'm paying a cost, right, of including this extra information. I have to increase my SNR threshold to get the same false alarm rate. All right, this is expected. And so a question you can ask is it worth it? Should I bother? Should I bother searching Y21, Y20, Y2-1? Or should I just look at 2-2 and 2-2? And if the system's not processing much, you might just want to look at these two. And so then what we do here, or what Ian did, is he said, let's just sort of simulate a potential population of binaries that we might see, right? And of course, the fun thing is, if the thing's face on, the amplitude's much higher. So most binaries that you're going to see are going to be face on, right? If it's edge on, you just don't get as much signal, okay? And so you sort of just do a little Monte Carlo over a few million of these things, and you say, for what, so what you want to say is, what fraction will I find above some fixed false alarm threshold using either the full waveform or just Y22 and Y2-2? And if it's not processing much, you should just ignore the fact it's processing altogether. And what this plot shows is mass 1 versus mass 2, and then each of these sort of hexagons is the fraction of templates in here that it's worth considering processing. Okay? And so down at sort of low equal masses, basically, you can forget about precession mostly. And the real processing effects are happening up here where you have sort of unequal mass ratios. Yep, okay. So, where are we? Okay. So then after maximization, we still have four dimensions to worry about. M1, M2, the magnitude of the spin and the angle between the spin and the orbital angular momentum. Something new that comes up here, which is a real headache, is that the metric on this parameter space that we want to template over, right, that we use to make templates, we also use it for our coincidence conditions and whatever, is highly dependent upon the parameters that we've maximized over. Right? For the non-spinning search, this wasn't the case. You maximize over distance and phase, and the metric, sort of, you know, the overlaps as you move around, kind of don't depend. Here they depend highly on these. And this is just a bonus headache, and it makes making template banks for this search a real nightmare. And for now, we just do something very naive. We use the non-spinning bank in M1, M2, and then we sort of just grid up these two parameters just coarsely, and that seems to do okay. It's then also difficult to use the metric in coincidence tests and stuff, so we figured we'll try out a coherent analysis. And so what's that about? Basically, what you want to do is combine, if you know where the thing came from in the sky, you know how sensitive each detector is to H plus and H cross. And so you combine the data streams from each detector accordingly, and you have an H plus stream, effectively an H cross stream, and you search for signals in that. If you have more than two detectors, you have some fun new stuff. you also can make a null stream, right? So you can combine the data in such a way that there will be zero gravitational waves in that data stream. Okay, and this is a very nice consistency test you can do in these coherent cases. And so Ian has implemented all of this, a coherent spinning search. Currently, it's for externally triggered events. Why? Because if you tell me the sky position, life's easy. If you don't know it, you've also got to tile the sky, and it's two more dimensions to worry about, and we didn't get to it yet. So for now, we're just you know, assuming we know the point on the sky, like if a GRB went off, which might well be a neutron star black hole, you'd know where it came from. And this has been run on a fake GRB in real data. Right, so we just pretended, oh, GRB went off there. It didn't, but we pretended. And this is what you get. So this is the time, and this is the SNR distribution. These are the non-processing templates, so the ones that we just ignored the precession on, and these are the processing ones. And what you'll see, if it was nice Gaussian noise, you'd see this, and you just see some horrible stuff, right? Glitches, whatever, in the data. Okay? These are not signals. This is glitches. Something's going on. Then we do a bunch of simulations, and of course, you do enough. They go everywhere. They come up with various signal-to-noise ratios, etc. But this is a disaster at the moment, because if I did this search, I'd need to find something that's louder than all this junk, right? So my sensitivity is only to things with signal-to-noise ratio bigger than 40 or something, which is wretched. So we do some tricks. I kind of talked about the null stream already, right? You just combine the data from the different detectors to form a stream where, by definition, there will be no gravitational waves in it from this point in the sky. And you search that. And the point is, if there are glitches in the data, they'll also show up in the null stream. Right? The other one you do is sort of this, what we call trace SNR. And so our coherent signal-to-noise ratio just has components which are sort of single detector SNR squared, and then it has sort of cross components with a combination of two detectors. The trace SNR just kind of takes the single detector parts of this coherent SNR. Right? And again, for glitches, that'll be big, and there won't be any there won't be any coherence between detectors. And then you're probably here tomorrow about sort of the usual chi-squared tests that we do. These can all be implemented too. And so here's a little picture, what you see. Here's the null stream, SNR, and you'll see there's some stuff that just has a horrible null statistic. So this is clearly something that showed up. It's not consistent with signal. It's got power in the null stream. There's some stuff that lies actually kind of looks nice in the null stream that we have to understand why. And here's the trace SNR, and you'll see for the glitches, they all lie kind of on the diagonal because there's no correlation between the detectors. Glitches happen in a single detector. For real signals, it lies off here. And so you can imagine imposing some cuts here and here to get rid of some of the junk, right? And we do that, and this is sort of how our sensitivity improves. This was before just using signal-to-noise ratio. Green is found, red is missed. And you see, don't worry about the units on here. It's just a comparative plot. You see, we're not doing very well, and then we introduce these various extra tests, and we do much better. And so where am I? At the end, spin makes life a lot harder, both for NR and for DA. We're trying to tackle it by doing this sort of targeted coherent search for spinning systems. At the moment, we need to find regions of parameter space where we win by including spin or precession. And just to end, much of the stuff I've talked about would work perfectly fine if someone just gave me a numerical relativity, full IMR waveforms, right? I could still do this nice maximization over the modes, et cetera, and I basically could drop it into this search. The one caveat, of course, is I've ignored higher harmonics. If I want to put them in as well as spin, I don't think we know how to do that in data analysis land yet. Thanks.
So I thought there was, to get rid of those four parameters, the D, iota, and such, there's actually four amplitude functions that you maximize over. So I thought you could do this with a chi-squared with 4 degrees of freedom statistic.
So hang on. Where are we going? So this thing, if you're doing the non-spinning search coherently, you do get chi-squared of 4. And you just, for maximizing these four things.
I meant non-coherent, maximizing of 4. I think it's...
You can't do that analytically. You cannot, no one's worked out, I don't think you can do it, to maximize over these 4 things analytically. So you freely do these 5 plus this extra phase, and you kind of wave your hand and say, it should be chi-squared 6, and it's pretty close.
So I thought it's actually the F statistic. I think if you reverse the Earth and the source, the preset, if you imagine what the F statistic does, but backwards.
The coherent non-spinning search is identical to the F statistic, which is something they use in pulsar searches.
This one isn't.
No. Right. At least no one's been able to write it like that, and I've looked hard, and I don't think it is.
So you mentioned the higher order modes. So all this is essentially for the in-spiral phase. Are the higher order modes important there?
I don't know. For non-spinning systems at 10 to 1, they can become important, right? But for spinning systems at 10 to 1, I don't know anyone's actually worked this out, and they may become very important. If someone has written a paper about it, I'd love to read it.
I have a comment and a question. The comment actually goes back to the question that Julian raised. I think the confusion arose because maybe in one of your slides you compared a chi-square distribution with 2 degrees of freedom with that of 6. But if it was actually a multi-alpha statistic being compared for non-spinning and spinning, it should have been 4 degrees versus 6, right?
This was for single detector. This is a single detector comparison. Right. Yeah.
Okay. And the question is, for the nice simulated results you showed, what templates were you using to recover those injections? I presume the injections actually had the Y22 and Y2-2, right?
Hang on. These are the injections were sort of targeted at gamma ray bursts, right? So one of the things is a neutron star, one of the things is a black hole, and the black hole may be spinning. So that's what the simulations have performed are.
And what templates were used to recover them?
The ones I was talking about, the PTF ones. These are non-processing ones where you do this trick and you say precession's not important, so I just ignore the 2-1, 2-0, 2-1, and those ones you include all 5.
Okay, so there were PTFs of that kind. Okay, thanks.
I think we should move on. The last talk of the day.